Marine Corps, the Merchant Marines seemed to be the service for maniacs or suicides, yet Link had managed not only to survive but flourish. By 1943, he had his own command, running troops and materiel to the hellfires of the Pacific Theater. Unlike most of his contemporaries, he never once lost a vessel to the enemy. At war's end, he, like many others, found that there were too many men and too few ships. During the late 40s and early 50s, Link became just another Yankee prowling the Far East, taking nearly any command offered to him. He ran questionable cargoes for shadowy companies and learned to keep his mouth shut. When first approached by the Phoenix's owners, Link had thought he was being offered the opportunity of a lifetime. No longer would he have to scrounge for a ship prostituting his integrity to remain at sea. They were giving him a chance once again to be the proud captain, the master of their flagship. It wasn't until after the contracts had been signed that the company told Link about the predestined fate of his vessel. It took 2 days and a sizable bonus for his bitterness to give way to acceptance. Now, stationed on the bridge, a cup of cooling coffee in a weathered hand, Link stared at the dark sea and cursed. He hated the corporate people who could arbitrarily decide to scuttle such a great ship. They didn't understand the bond between captain and vessel. For the sake of profit, they were about to destroy a beautiful, living thing. The idea sickened Link to the bone. He hated himself for accepting, for allowing himself to be part of such a loathsome act.
"Position!"
Ralph Link barked. Before the position could be given, a crewman stooped over the radar repeater and said in a remote voice, "Contact 12 miles dead ahead." Link glanced at the chronometer on the bulkhead to his left. The contact would be the rendezvous vessel that would pick up the crew after the Phoenix was gone. They were right on time and in position.
"Good work, men."
He'd been given very specific and somewhat strange orders concerning the location, course, and time that he was to sink his ship. He assumed the North Pacific had been chosen because of her unpredictable weather patterns. The weather here could turn deadly without a moment's notice, building waves that could swamp a battleship and whipping up winds that literally tore the surface from the ocean. When the time came for the insurance inquiry, the rendezvous vessel would corroborate any story they manufactured.
"You know the drill, gentlemen,"
Link growled, lighting a cigarette from the glowing tip of his last.
"Engines all stop. Helm, bring us to 97.5 degrees magnetic."
This precise but inexplicable positioning of the vessel complied exactly with Link's final orders from the head office. They had given no reason for this action, and Link knew enough not to pry. The engine speed was reduced, the rhythmic throb diminished until it was almost imperceptible. The ship's wheel blurred as the young seaman cranked it around.
"Helm?"
"We're coming up on 97 degrees, sir, as ordered."
"Range?"
11 miles.
Link picked up the radio hand mic and dialed in the shipboard channel.
"Now hear this. We've reached position. All crew not on duty report to the lifeboats. Engineering, emergency shutdown of the boilers and open the seacocks on my mark. Prepare to abandon ship."
He looked around the bridge slowly, his eyes burning every detail of her into his brain.
"I'm sorry, sweetheart,"
he mumbled.
10 miles,
the sonar man called.
"Open the seacocks. Abandon ship."
Link replaced the mic and pressed a button on the radio. A klaxon began to wail. The cry of a dying woman, Link thought. Link waited on the bridge while the crew filed out to the boat deck. He had to spend a little time alone with the ship before he left her. He grasped the rung of the oaken wheel. The wood was so new that he felt slivers pricking at his skin. Never would this wheel achieve the smooth patina of use. Instead, it would become so much rot on the bottom of the ocean.
"God damn it,"
Link said aloud, then strode from the bridge. Gone were the days of men scampering down cargo netting into boats bobbing on the surface of the sea. Ocean freight and cargo had spared no expense in outfitting their flagship with every modern safety device. One lifeboat was already full of men and up on the davits. The winchman waited for a curt nod from Link before lowering the boat to the sea below. The warm night breeze blew smoke from Link's cigarette into his eyes as he climbed into the second lifeboat. The other men in the boat with him were subdued, ashen. They didn't talk or look each other in the eye as Link nodded to the winchman. The winchman threw a toggle switch and the pulleys that lowered the lifeboat began to whine. The boat hit the calm surface with a white froth splash. Instantly, two men stood up to detach the cables that secured